Good morning. Today's daf Erev in Lamed Vav. We are in Lamed Hamed Beis. About 7 lines on the bottom of the Amud. We're starting this morning with the words Rami Daraisa Daraisa. Here in the third parak of Shabbos, discussion has been Eruv Etchumim, and it continues to be that discussion. The Mishnayos brought about 2 points since the beginning of the parak. One is that when you set your Eruv Etchumim or establish a new Makam Shvisa, so you're going to be doing so with food. Two meals worth of food is going to be put in your new location. That's going to be now considered your new point of residence, your new domicile. And from there, you can walk 2,000 amas in every direction. The reason why you want to do that is because you want to gain. You want to gain 2,000 amas in a particular direction. And so therefore, you create a new point of center. As we're going to be discussing a little bit at the end of today's daf, it's a zero-sum game. You gain in one direction, you're going to lose in another direction. It's not like you are getting more, you're just simply moving. You're moving your new point of center. So you're doing so with two meals worth of food. That's what we discussed in the beginning of the parak. Since then, already from Daf Lamed Beis, we talked about accessibility. The idea that the Erev has to be in a place where you can reach it during Ben HaShemashos. Ben HaShemashos is the point of acquisition, it's the time of acquisition, and you're going to have to put it in a place where you could you can retrieve it. And that means that there can be no halachic stumbling block, there can be no halachic blockade preventing you from obtaining it. If by getting it you're going to be violating Shabbos, so that is considered inaccessible. Lengthy discussion that we had is that what if you're violating not Nisud Daraisa, what if you're violating an Nisud Rabban in order to gain it? So that's been a lengthy discussion. Yesterday, we spoke about what happens if it's locked in a chest and you lost a key. And now the only means to get into it is you're going to have to break into it. Is that going to be an issue? That was the discussion in yesterday's daf. And then yesterday we talked about the lost Erev. You set up the Erev and it was lost. A number of things happened to it. It rolled out beyond Chum. Or the Mishnah describes that it collapsed under a pile of rubble. Or it burnt up. Or it was Truma and it becomes Tameh. So under these circumstances, the Erev is lost. When was it lost? So if it was lost before Ben HaShemashos, so then obviously the Erev is no good. It didn't acquire for you your new Makam Shvisa. On the other hand, if it happened to you after Ben HaShemashos, so then it's fine. Despite the fact that you're not going to have an Erev when you get there, but what its purpose was to make an acquisition, to make a kinyan of Makam Shvisa, and that occurred during the Ben HaShemashos period, and that would have been fine. What if it's a Safek? Okay, so that's our topic. Our topic is Safek, and the Mishnah weighed in on this issue. The Mishnah, going back to yesterday's daf on Lamed Hamed Aleph, so brought down a machlokus amongst the Tanaim. What do we say regarding a Safek? So, Rameir Rav Yehuda of the position in the Mishnah, so you're Chamar Gamal, right? An expression of literally donkey camel, you're stuck. Meaning, because it's a Safek, you simply don't know. In other words, it might have been there, it might not have been there. And you have to take into consideration both possibilities. The possibility that it was there, so that's your new Makam Shvisa. The possibility that it's not there, so that means that your original home is your Makam Shvisa. And so therefore, the only thing you could do now is walk in between the two areas, but you cannot extend. If, let's say, you and your Makam Shvisa are 2,000 amas away from one another, so that's it. In other words, moving to your right now, or right to the outside, so that would in either direction now, would be strictly prohibited because this may in fact be the limits of the other Makom Shvisa. So that's the positions both of Reb Meir and of Reb Yehuda. On the other hand, Reb Yossi and Reb Shimon say that the Safek Erev is going to be kosher. Okay. Later this morning, we're going to go back and we're going to revisit the position of Reb Yossi. Where we were yesterday was trying to make sense of Reb Meir because Reb Meir seemingly was inconsistent. On other topics, notably that of Tuma. So Reb Meir says that by a Safek, so if it's a Tumah Derabbanan, we're going to be Mekel. If it's Tumah Daraisa and it's a Safek, the Gemara yesterday gave a host of examples. He went into the mikvah, did not know if the mikvah had the requisite amount, 40 Sa'a, and he was Tami Daraisa, so that's not going to be a good tefillah. We don't know if the tefillah was good. So under those circumstances, we're going to be Machmir. That's not much of a chiddush, but what if it's a Tumah Derabbanan? So Reb Meir in the Brisa yesterday said, by Tumah Derabbanan, you're going to be Mekel. And so where did that leave us off yesterday? A little bit confused. Meaning if by a Tumah Derabbanan, a Safek by Tumah Derabbanan, Reb Meir is going to be Mekel, so presumably Eruv, which is also a Din Derabbanan, it not presumably, it is a din derabanan. So then Rav Meir should be mekel as well, and so that would seemingly be an inconsistency within the shita of Rav Meir. To resolve that inconsistency, so the Gemara concluded yesterday that Rav Meir holds that tchumim are da'araisa. So the Rav Meir subscribes to a position which is not a popular position, but it's still a position, and that the din of tchum is the din da'araisa, and so therefore that's why he's going to be machmir as it relates to tchum. The Gemara notes that it goes a little, it's a little bit difficult because in terms of measuring, the Gemara gives some certain allowances. We're not going to go over it again right now. The Gemara gives some certain allowances in terms of measuring. So the Gemara says that's fine. As far as Rav Meir himself is concerned, Rav Meir holds that tchum is da'araisa. But as far as positions regarding measuring, so Rav Meir was not quoting his own position, but rather his Rebbeim's position in terms of tchumming the Rabbanan. But he himself holds that tchum is da'araisa. And as we pointed out yesterday, the one that we know for sure holds that tchum is da'araisa is Rabbi Akiva. So to a certain degree, makes sense because Rav Meir, where did he get the position from? So he got it from his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, that tchumim are da'araisa. On the other hand, the Gemara at the end of yesterday's daf said that one of his Rebbeim said that's the Rabbanan. So what we know for sure is that one of the Rebbeim is not Rabbi Akiva. Okay, that brings us to where we are right now in the Gemara. We're going to now pick it up. V'rami da'araisa da'araisa, l'Rav Meir. Still some more yishuv that's required within Shitas Rav Meir. And so here the Gemara continues by quoting another Mishnah in Taharos. Mishnah writes that Naga be'chabalayla ve'inayidi imchai imeis ulamach yishkim amatzo ameis. Okay. Person made contact with a person at night. Okay, right. Stayed in a hotel the previous night with another person, and they both went to bed, which means that they both were alive, and then a person woke up. He knows that he made contact with that person over the course of the night, but Rachman is the person when the other person did not wake up. The other person died. And obviously, if they woke up, or I should say they, if he woke up in the morning, so then there's nothing to discuss, obviously. If he woke up and the next person over is dead, so then obviously he's tummy. That's not much of a discussion. However, what happened was is that he had a negiah, he made contact with that person, and then he left sometime before the morning. And so now he does not know if the negiah happened before the person died or post-mortem. So what do we say under those circumstances? So, l'macha hishkim amatzo mei, so Rabbi Meir mitahir. So Rabbi Meir takes a position, a most unusual position, which definitely needs clarification, that the person's tahor. Now the Chachamim say no, that the person who made the Negiah, so he's going to be Tameh. Because as far as Tumah is concerned, so what do we assume? Now in other words, clearly there was a change. Meaning prior to going to bed, so the other person was alive. And then in the morning, he's not alive. So clearly there was a change. And so what we're dealing with over here is a classic scenario of a Chazakah. But which Chazakah are we going to look at? The Chazakah of where he was when he went to bed, meaning alive? Or do we say Chazakah the Hashta? The Chazak is that right now he's dead. So according to the Chachamim, very clear. Chachamim say, Kishas mitziyasan, as they were found. Meaning, obviously, when you discovered the body was dead, obviously. And so that is going to establish the Chazakah. And so the person who made contact with him the night prior, so he's going to assume now that he's going to be Tameh. That's Shitas Chachamim. But meanwhile, Shitas Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir is of the position that the person is Tahor. Now this is a Safik, and it's a Dindar Raisa. You make contact with the mace, you're going to be tamed min haTorah. So over here, a suffix on a daraisa and Ramir's makel, so that's very difficult. And that goes against everything, the entire binyan that we built yesterday within understanding Shitas Rav Meir. By a suffix daraisa, we're going to be machmir. By a suffix darabanan, we're going to be makel. And meanwhile, over here, the braisa says that by a suffix daraisa, Ramir's makel. So the Gemara is going to propose a couple of answers. Amar of Yirmiyah Mishnah Sinish Ayalah Sheretz Kol Ben Eshmashos. So Rav Yirmiyah suggests, well, maybe our Mishnah is talking about a case where the Sheretz was on the Truma during the entire Bein HaShemashos period. And that's why Rav Meir in our Mishnah is going to be Machmer, to which the Gemara says that's difficult. That's really difficult. Because Yahachi Bahalema Rabbi Yossi Safik Erev Kasher? Can't be. If you had the Sheretz on the Truma the entire Bein HaShemashos period, so then who's going to argue with Shita's Rav Meir? Obviously, the Truma is Tameh from the beginning of the Bein HaShemashos period. It's not consumable by anybody, and Rav Yossi says, oh, that's a suffix, and it's going to be tahor. It can't. If that's the ukimta of the Mishnah, no one's going to argue with that position. So the Gemara says, fine. So Rabbi Rav Yosef Darmi Tarvayu Hacha B'shteki Te'ed Maskinan Achas Omeres Mi Bo Yom Nitme V'achas Omeres Mi Shechashecha. So the Gemara now gives one of two answers. First, the answer of Rabbi and Rav Yosef, and that was, is that we have some sort of evidence over here. Two sets of witnesses. Now, it happens to be that it's complicated because the witnesses contradict one another. And in terms of what exactly happened, meaning we know the person died, but when did the person die? So one set of witnesses comes along and says that the person died, amiba od yom. And then, while it was still day. The case of our Mishnah, the case of the Eruv. Right? The Truma becomes Tamei Miba od yom while it was still day. And the other one says that the Truma becomes Tamei, no, Misha Chashecha, only after it got dark. And so what do we have over here, aside from having a chazaka, we also have two sets of witnesses. What are we going to do with these two sets of witnesses? Take a look at the bottom Rashi over here, who explains now how is Rav Meir looking at these two sets of witnesses. Now, obviously, they're offsetting. Okay, they're offsetting, but does that mean that it basically brings us to zero? Or do we still take it into account? Rashi writes on the bottom, Achas Omeres Mi Bo'od Yom Avaha Pligi Rav Yossi Savar Uke Trela Bahadi Treva Uke Truma Achazaka Kamaisa V'chi Ancha Tahara Havai. So as far as Shitas Rav Yossi is concerned, it's actually very simple to explain. The two witnesses are giving different reports, so they're just simply offsetting, and they basically amount to zero. So fine, so we basically take the testimony, we throw it out. Now, where was the Truma when it was placed down? In a state of Tahara. So we continue with Achazaka, meaning we know it becomes Tame at a later point in time, but we don't know when. And the chazaka was that it was Truma Tahara, so therefore it maintains the status of Truma Tahara, and even though it did become Tamei, we don't know when, it's a Safek, Rav Yossi says we're going to be Tahara. Good. That's Shitas Rav Yossi. But we're here to try to clarify and understand Shitas Rav Meir. Rav Meir Savar, continuing in Rashi, Kevin Dika Katam Afgalei Mi Chazaka, Bisfeka Daraisa Lo Azlin Abasar Chazaka. Now, Rav Meir will say, look, it's true that the Truma was granted a chazaka of being Tahara, but then you have one set of witnesses. Now, granted, of course, that one set of witnesses was contradicted by another set, but here's what that one set of witnesses actually accomplished. It removed the chazaka. So we're not going to follow that one set of witnesses, being that it was offset by another set of witnesses, but what the witnesses do, however, is remove the presumption that we once knew. Avabanogea, sorry, that's before we get to the next part of Rashi. And so that means to say now that with the chazaka now removed, and we don't know when it becomes Tameh, so now Rameir is going to come to the conclusion that we're going to have to be Machmir. And we're going to have to say that we don't know when it became Tameh, and we're going to therefore assume that it became Tameh at an earlier point in time, despite the fact it did have a chazaka of Tahara, but the one set of Adam took away that chazaka. Okay, that's the way Rashi explains it. Now, let's contrast that to the case where the person touching the mesa at night. Rashi says, and so Rashi says, now we'll go to the case of the mace. So now there are no competing witnesses over there. In other words, all we have is the person went to bed, the person did not wake up in the morning, and now which chazaka are we going to work with? So Rav Meir says, chazaka demi kara. And there are no witnesses that are disrupting the chazaka mikara. Now, of course, the facts on the ground is that now he's currently dead, but in terms of establishing when that occurred over the course of the night, so Rav Meir favors the chazaka de mikara, the original chazaka when he went to bed. Okay, so if I can try to organize and simplify, really what is that issue over here between Rav Meir and the Chachamim regarding the case of the person that died overnight? So Chachamim favor the chazaka de hashta, meaning there are competing chazakas. He did not wake up in the morning, he's dead, so that's one chazaka, meaning that's a fact on the ground. And the other fact on the ground is that he went to bed that night, meaning he was alive before going to bed. Which chazaka is going to take precedence? So the Chachamim say the chazaka de hashta, and Rebbe Meir says the chazaka de mikara. Okay, good. So now in the case of Suffolk, so now we know that according to the Chachamim, so the chazaka is that you're going to take the chazaka de hashta and just simply bring it backwards. So we're going to assume that he was dead over the course of the whole night. You touched him. At one point in the night, you don't know if he was alive or dead. So the presumption is that you touched him when he was dead. Rav Meir, on the other hand, says, no, chazaka de mikara. Chazaka de mikara, he went to bed alive. So that chazaka continues until we know otherwise, meaning until he was discovered in the morning that he was no longer alive. Now, how does all that working with our case in the Mishnah? Our case in the Mishnah is complicated by the fact that you have two offsetting sets of Eidim. So obviously, we don't regard the Eidim, but what, according to Rav Meir, the Eidim do is it removes the Chazaka d'Meikara. Okay. That is all one approach, admittedly, not an easy approach, but that's approach number one, and that's both Rav and Rav Yosef. Rav gives a second approach, as we are now in the top of Lamed Vav Lamed Aleph. Rav Amar Hasam Trei Chazaka L'Kula V'Hacha Chada Chazaka L'Kula. So Rav's approach, a little more simple, a little more straightforward, and that is, we don't have to introduce witnesses in either one of the cases. Even if there are offsetting witnesses, says Rashi, that's not the critical difference between the two cases. The critical difference, says Rashi, is how many chazakas are we dealing with? So in the case of the mace, we're dealing only with one chazaka and only one chazaka lakula. In the case of the Erev, we're only dealing with one chazaka, and that's one chazaka lakula. Meaning to say, in the case of the Erev, so we know that the Truma was Tahora. That's it. Now, that obviously is good, but that's only one chazaka. So for one chazaka, Rav Meir says, that's not enough in the case of the Suffolk to conclude that we're going to say that it continued to be Tahor. However, in the case of the mace of the person overnight, who died sometime overnight, there you have two chazakas working in your favor. Because one, he went to bed that night, so he was alive. So that's one chazaka. And number two is that the person who made contact with him, he was also in a state of tahara. So over here now that we have two chazakas operating in favor of concluding that the person's tahor, that's where Rav Meir says, in that case over there, the assumption is that he touched him not after he died, but he touched him before he died. Okay. That is a second approach in terms of how to resolve the stira between Rav Meir and Rav Meir. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Gemara's discussion, making yishuv. Between all the various positions of Rav Meir by Erevin, Rav Meir by Suffolk Erevin, by Suffolk Tumah, by Suffolk Tumah de Rabbanan. So all the various shitas now have been resolved. And now as we're on Lamed Vav Lamed Aleph, so now we are done with Rav Meir, we are up to now Rav Yossi. And we're going to try to make sense of Rav Yossi. Now you remember Rav Yossi yesterday in the Brisa. In the case of the Suffolk Tumah, so Rav Yossi took a stricter approach, and that is by Suffolk Tumah, even if the Tumah is Durabanan. So Rav Yossi says that the individual is going to be Tamei. Meaning to say that the Tumah that he has, he definitively has, is a Tumah Durabanan. Nevertheless, in the case of Suffolk, it's going to be Machmir. Meanwhile, what did Rav Yossi say regarding Eruv? So here we go back to the Mishnah. Rav Yossi quoted of Tomus, who quoted in the name of five Zakenim, that by Suffolk Eruv, it's going to be Kasher. Okay, so here it's Rav Yossi, and the resolving that we need to do is going to work now in the opposite direction. By Tumah de Rabbanan, he's Machmir. By Erev de Rabbanan, we're going to be Mekel. Rav Yossi's Mekel. That's a problem. And the Gemara addresses that right now. Kasha de Rav Yossi ad de Rav Yossi, so it's difficult for Rav Yossi. So the Gemara here is going to give three approaches in terms of how to deal with Rav Yossi. Amar Rav Huna bar Chinana Shani Tuma, Hove Yesh La'ikar Min HaTorah. So the Gemara says, well, look, when it comes to Tuma, even Afilo Tuma de Rabbanan, so Ikaro Min HaTorah. Yes, it's true that the Chachamim regards there are a number of cases of Tuma. Right, going back to Shabbos, the Yud Ches Davar, 18 decrees that were made by Beis Shammai. So yes, it's true. There is an institution of Tuma de Rabbanan, but at least it's piggybacking on Tuma de Araisa. So the Chachamim obviously had a platform in which to work on. So it's a stronger Tumah Derabbanan. Masha Enke, when it comes to Tchum and Erev, that is strictly Derabbanan. Now the Gemara, for a moment, doesn't see it that way, but the Gemara will get there. So the Gemara says, Shani Tumah, Hol V'yesh La'ikar Min HaTorah. Shabbos Nami, Daraisahi. What do you mean? Tchum is about Chilul Shabbos. So can we say that it's Ikar Min HaTorah? No, the Gemara says no, because of Rav Yossi, Tchumim de Rabbanan. Rav Yossi is of the position that Tchumim is a Din de Rabbanan, and meaning to say that it has no connection whatsoever to the Malachas of Shabbos. Rashi makes this point really clear. Rashi writes over here, Umishani Kasav Rav Yossi, Tchumim de Rabbanan, I'm reading the Rashi, Umishim de lo leisi lezazul lebishar sfeikos de Malachas Shabbos leka lemigzar. As far as making a decree by Erev, so that a person will be more careful about Shabbos in total. So Rashi says there's no need to make such a gzera. The lodama malachas litchumim. Because as far as malachas are concerned, malachas and tchumim really exist in two different categories. Really interesting Rashi, but it's a simple pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara is clearly delineating, differentiating between Tchum, which the Gemara is qualifying right now as no Iker B'Tor whatsoever, as opposed to Tumah D'Rabbanan, which is really platformed by Tumah D'Oraisa. So Rashi is just simply articulating what the Gemara really is saying. Aval Tumos Dami LaHadade. Tumas are similar to one another, and so therefore it is fair to compare the Tumah D'Rabbanan to the Tumah D'Oraisa and say that the Tumah D'Rabbanan at least has an Ikar, has a source in the D'Oraisa. Okay, so that is approach number one. Approach number two of the Gemara, it could be that when Rav Yossi was speaking regarding Eruv, he wasn't espousing his own position, but rather that of his Rebbeim. Dekanami Dekanami, the Gemara says, in fact, read the Mishnah again. It's clear in the Mishnah. I'm Rav Yossi, Avtumos Heid Mishum Chamisha Zekenim Shasafik Eruv, Kasher. Okay, so the Mishnah says that when Rav Yossi was espousing a position, it wasn't his position, but rather he was quoting Avtumos, who said it in the name of five Zekenim. Shmamina. So the Gemara says, yeah, so the Mishnah, we're not hearing Rav Yossi's own position. His own position is that he is Machmir, like in the case of the Safik Tumah D'Rabbanan. He's Machmir. So presumably Rav Yossi himself would be Machmir. He, in the Mishnah, was just espousing his Rebbeim's position. A third view of the Gemara, Rav Amar, Hasam Hainu Tamid Rav Yossi, Hemet Tamach Cheskaso, Ve'emelo Tavam. Another way to resolve this is as follows. Really, Rav Yossi is espousing his own position by Eruv. And really, by Safik D'Rabbanan, we're going to be Mako. On the other hand, however, in the case of the Safik Tumah, let's consider. The person going into the mikvah, he for sure was Tameh. And now, a questionable Tvila. So there, what's the Chazaka? The Chazaka tells us that we know for a fact that he was Tameh. And so therefore, Hemed Tameh Al Cheskaso. What we're going to do is just to perpetuate what we know for sure, and that is that person was Tameh. Ve'emelo tovel, and therefore let's conclude that he didn't tovel. Adarabah hemin mikvah cheskasa ve'emelo chaser. So the Gemara says, okay, but he went into a mikvah, and don't we know for sure that the mikvah at one point in time was tahor? So what you have really is a chazaka versus a chazaka. So the Gemara says, b'mikvah shalom nimdad. Okay, well maybe we're discussing a scenario in which the mikvah was never measured, and so therefore it is not chazaka versus chazaka because we don't know for sure that the mikvah was ever kosher. Tanya, Gemara quotes a Braisa. Ketzad Amar Rav Yossi, Suffolk Erev Kasher. Let's give examples where Rav Yossi would say that the Suffolk Erev would be Kasher. Meaning here in the Braisa, we're going to once again qualify the position Rav Yossi regarding Suffolk Erev. So the examples would go like this. Erev b'truma Suffolk mi bodyom nitme Suffolk mishachashecha nitme. So he used Truma as his Erev. And it became Tameh, but we don't know. Maybe during the day, maybe after Benes Rosh, we simply don't know. V'chein b'peru safik mibo yom, nitkenu safik mishachashecha nitkenu. Or maybe you use fruit. Now the way it seems, well, the way the case seems right now, is that the fruit you're using is tevel. And you are misakein. You took off Shumas HaMaisra so that the fruit is no longer untithed. Now you took it off sometime around the Benes Rosh period, which understandably is difficult just even to understand. In other words, to be mafresh Shumas HaMaisros. Once Benes Masha starts, okay, that's the Mishnah in the second parak of Shabbos. Okay, but meanwhile, we're right now just focusing on the Suffolk. We don't know when that happened. So, Zehu Suffolk Erev Kasher. So these are examples of a Suffolk Erev where it's going to be Kasher. On the other hand, Aval Erev B'Truma, Suffolk Torah, Suffolk Tameh. But let's say your Ma'ariv B'Truma, already from the beginning, this Truma may be Tameh, may be Tahor. Meaning already starting with a Suffolk. So v'chem b'peru suffik nitkenu suffik lo nitkenu, or fruit that possibly is tithed, possibly untithed. So ain't the suffik erev kasher. So yes, it's a suffik, but Rav Yossi is not going to be makel in such a circumstance. Because to be makel, it needed to be starting off good, and then something happened. And we don't know when it happened. That's the kind of suffik where Rav Yossi is going to be makel. But in the case of where you start off with a suffik, Rav Yossi is not going to be makel under those circumstances. Now, so far so good. Hopefully something caught your attention in the beginning of that Braisa, which is that in the Braisa, I gave two examples. One, where it started off as Truma Tahara, and then it becomes Tameh. The second example is you started with Peros Tevel, and then you were Mafish Truma. So the Gemara says, if you consider those two cases are mirror images of one another, and they shouldn't be put in the same category. The Gemara asks exactly this question. Maishna Truma Damar Hema Truma Cheskaso Ve'ema Taharahi. So in the case of Truma, so the reason why Rav Yossi is going to be Mekel is because it started off as good. And so therefore, the assumption is, the presumption is that during Beinos Mashos, it continued to be good. So the Gemara says, Peros Nami, Hemitevel Cheskos, Vemelo Nitkanu. In the case of Peros, using that very same argument, so now we know going into Shabbos, the Peros were Tevel, they were Usur. And now they were corrected, we don't know when they were corrected, so we're left, why don't we just simply go back to the original Chazaka, which is that the Peros were Usur. And so therefore the conclusion should be that the Erev is not good. So the Gemara says, those two first examples given in this Braisa are literally the polar opposite of one another, starting from two different points. So lo tema safik mi ba'od yom nitkenu, ala ema safik mi ba'od yom nidmu'u, safik mi shechashecha nidmu'u. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to have to make an important correction in that second case of the Braisa. In that second case of the Braisa, the pair started off as being kosher. And what happened? They became dema. Now I'll work with Rashi's first pshat, and that is we're going to go with the classic understanding of what dimua is. Dimua is when you have truma getting mixed into chulin. Truma mixed together with chulin, and you don't have a ratio of bittul, which would be 1 to 100. So truma mixed in with chulin has the status of what's called dema, dalad mem ayin. And that cannot be eaten by non-kohen. It can only be eaten by kohanim. So the pera started off as being perfectly fine, and then at one point, sometime between day and night, some truma gets mixed in. It becomes dimua. We don't know when that happened. Okay, good. That's perfect. That's exactly similar to the case of the truma that was tahora. It becomes tame, and we don't know when it becomes tame. Good. Rashi obviously is bothered by the fact that once it's dema, so it's not aser, just can't be eaten by non-kohanim. And so why don't we just simply say that it's edible and therefore should be good erev? So Rashi says what you're going to have to say in this first pshat that we just offered is that this Braisa, the author of the Braisa, subscribes to the viewpoint of Sumchus, which is that if a non-Kohen were to set up his erev with Truma, it would not be good erev. That is not the opinion of our Mishnah going all the way back. But nevertheless, so the author of this Braisa is going like Shita Sumchas. You'll have to say that in order to maintain this pshat. Rashi does offer another pshat, but meanwhile, right now we are going to go on. Bar Rav Shmuel, Bar Rav Yitzchak, Mei Rav Huna. Okay, so before we get to the upcoming questions of the Gemara, so now that was a lot of resolving, but okay, we're basically here. Meaning, in the Shitas of the Mishnah regarding a Safek Eruv, so Rav Meir is Machmir, Rav Yossi is Mekel, and so over the course of yesterday's daf and a good portion of today's daf, so we did a lot of ironing. We had to iron out the opinion of Rav Meir and iron out the opinion of Rav Yossi, but basically everything holds. Rav Meir by a Suffolk Erev is going to be Machmir, and Rav Yossi by a Suffolk Erev is going to be Mekel. So with that in mind, so Gemara now has some questions. Question number one, by Rav Shmuel, by Rav Yitzchak, by Rav Huna. Following question was posed from Rav Huna. So there were two loaves of truma. That's the Rashi says we're dealing with truma over here. Two loaves of truma. One loaf is tamei, the other one is tahor. Ve'amar. Now he doesn't know which one's which, obviously presenting a serious problem. But here's a statement. Irvu li b'tahora. B'chol makum shehu. So I'm going to use the loaf that's tahor as my eruv. I don't know which one it is, but whichever one it is, that's the one that's going to be my Erev. So is that going to work? So Tibai le Rameir, Tibai le Rav Yossi. So first the Gemara thinks that we can ask the question both for Rameir and for Rav Yossi. Tibai le Rameir. So I can look at Rameir, Hasam Deleika Tahora, Ha'acha, Ha'ika Tahora. So look, even though Rameir is Machmir by Safek, but over here, one of the loaves is Tahor. Maybe in this case over here, he'll be more Mekel. So Odoma Afila Rav Yossi. Or maybe the question also is fit for Rav Yossi. I mean, we can ask the question according to Rav Yossi, because lo kamar ela hasam di'im isa dihitara yadala. So it's true that Rav Yossi is Mako, but in a case where it started off as being Tahor. Avahacha halo yadala. So, but over here, it's true that one of the loaves is Tahor, but you don't know which loaf is Tahor. So the question really could go according to Rav Meir, could go according to Rav Yossi. Rav Huna says, all this analysis doesn't speak to me. Amar Lei, Rav Huna's response was, Bein l'Rav Yossi, Bein l'Rav Meir, Be'in and Suda Haruyim Yom Baleika. So Rav Huna says, the answer here is very simple. You have two loaves of bread. One is Torah, one's Tameh. Can I eat either one of them? The answer is no, because it's a suffix. We don't know which one's which. So now, in order for the Eruv to be good Eruv, it has to be Se'uda Haru'uya Miba'o Yom. You had to have been able on Eruv Shabbos to sit down and have eaten it. It has to be something that is readily available, edible, and both practically and halachically. And so over here, these two loaves were once tummy and once torah, and I don't know which one's which. It's not a se'uda haru'uya miba'o yom. And therefore, it's just simply no good. Okay. Ba'mine rava me Rav Nachman. Our second question. This one being posed to Rav Nachman. Kikerzu hayom chol amachra kodesh. So, a person makes the following declaration. This loaf of bread right now is chol, tchulin. And then what I wanted to do on Shabbos is I wanted to become kodesh on Shabbos. He's declaring it hektish. But he doesn't want the hektish to be chal right away. He wants the effectiveness of the hektish to take place on Shabbos. When on Shabbos, he doesn't say. The Amar Ervali Bazeh. And now with this loaf that is going to transition from being chulin to hektish on Shabbos, can he use it now for his Erev? So Amar lo Eruva Eruv. So Rav Nachman's answer is it's a good Erev. Now, let's do this case. Let's do it in the reverse. Hayom kodesh lamachar chol. Today the bread is hektish. Tomorrow it's going to be chulin. How can that happen? So Rashi says because he's got money. And what he's going to do is transfer the kedusha from the bread to the money. Okay, so he's going to be poda. So here, he wants that to occur on Shabbos. Okay, I certainly understand. There's a question of creating that kind of transfer on Shabbos itself and the appropriateness of creating that kind of transfer. So fine. So I will table that discussion, meaning I'll just simply sidestep it and just deal with the Gemara's main point that it wants to make. Which is, under those circumstances, what do we say? So, Va'amar Erev Libazen, he wants to make an Erev now with this, Mahu, what would be the halacha Amarle, Ein Eruv Erev. So, Rav Nachman's answer is, not a good Erev. So, Maishna, so now, Rava, it says to Rav Nachman, I don't really see the difference between the two cases. So, Amarle, so Rav Nachman says, L'chi techol ala kor demilcha. So, go measure a core of salt, an expression the Gemara uses often, and the idea is that think about it some more, right? A core of salt, by the way, is a lot of salt. Spend some more time thinking about it, analyzing it. Maybe do a service for me, and I'll tell you whatever. It's an expression. Basically, it does need more thought and analysis. But he says, but I'll tell you. So hayom chol ulamachar kodesh. So in the case of the bread being chulin, and then it's going to become kodesh on Shabbos. So misfeka lo nachta le kedusha. So now what? So you're wondering, when does the Kedusha take place? Meaning, the only thing he says is, it's going to be Kadosh on Shabbos. So now you think that during the Bein HaShemashos period is going to be Kadosh? Bein HaShemashos, so that's a period of Suffolk. The Kedusha is not going to take place during the Bein HaShemashos period. It will only take place after the Bein HaShemashos period. When is the Erev Kona for you? During Bein HaShemashos. That's why in that case over there, the Erev is going to be good. But Hayom Kodesh Lamachar Chol, now we'll do the same thing, but we'll just simply do it in the reverse. The bread start off as Kodesh. I want it to become chol on Shabbos by transferring the Kedusha onto money. So now when's that going to occur? So I said I want it to occur on Shabbos. So misfeka lo pakale Kedusha minei. Now you're wondering, did that occur during Bein HaShemashos? No. Bein HaShemashos is a period of Suffolk. The only time that it's going to transfer is when it's Vadai Shabbos, meaning after Bein HaShemashos. So what was the status of that loaf during Bein HaShemashos? It was a hektish. And so therefore you can't make Eruv with hektish. Okay. So that's the difference between the cases. Tanan Hasam. We have a mission over here from Tvul Yom. Our mission from Tvul Yom is going to be based on the following pieces of information. We know that if Truma were to come into contact with a Tvul Yom, so the Truma becomes Pasal. Okay? Tvul Yom can be a person, could be Kli as well. A Tvul Yom means that the person of the Kli was Tameh, Tovled in the Mikvah, and now is waiting for Harav Shemesh, waiting for sunset. First Mishnah in Shas, first Mishnah in Brachos, deals with the case of a Tvul Yom. So, if this Kli now, we're dealing here with a Kli. If the Kli toppled in the Mikvah and we're waiting for Harav Shemesh, and so now, if Truma were to come into contact with this Kli, the Truma would become Pasul. That is point number one. Point number two is that when the Levi is given his Maaser Rishon, so for the Levi now, he can't eat the Maaser Rishon yet. What he has to do is he has to separate Trumas Maaser, 10% of his Maaser Rishon, and give it to a Kohen. Prior to that, for the Levi, the Maaser Rishon is Tevel. it's equivalent to tevel. It is absolutely prohibited for the Levi to eat his Maaser Rishon until he's mafrish and separates the Chumas Maaser. Okay, so now let's say the Levi right now wants to be mafrish his Chumas Maaser from his Maaser Rishon, and right now he's looking around, and the only kli that he has is a kli which is a Tvul Yom. And that means to say that he has to wait till tonight in order to use it for the Chumas Maaser. So the Mishnah here gives us a really interesting maneuver in what this Levi can do. Tanan Hasam. So now we get to learn the Mishnah together. Lagin Tvul Yom Shemalom Menachavis Shel Maaser Tevel V'Amar Hari Zeh Chumas Maaser Lichesh Etechshach Dvarv Kayamim. So what he could do is the following. He could basically pour the amount for the Chumas Maaser into this Tvul Yom Keli, and he could basically now put the effectiveness that it's transitioning into Chumas Maaser on time delay. And he could say, look, I don't want it to become Chumas Maaser right now, because once it's Chumas Maaser of course is Truma. And now that it's currently in a Tvul Yom Keli, it's going to become Pasul. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to measure it now, but I do not want the Chumas Maaser status to take effect until tonight. Brilliant maneuver, and it works. And the Mishnah in Tvul Yom says that such a maneuver would work, and so therefore he can put a delay in the effectiveness of, in the transition of this this Tevel Maaser into Chumas Maaser. Wonderful. V'im Amar Irvu Li B'zeh Lo Amar Klum. And then the Mishnah in Tvul Yom says, now, it's Friday. And let's say he says the following. I would like now this to serve as my Eruv. So then the Mishnah says, Lo Amar Klum. Well, doesn't work. And you can understand why it doesn't work. Because it only is going to be mutter for consumption only after it gets dark. So prior to that, it's Tevel Gamor. It's Isser Gamor. So the only time that the Erev works is only if it is edible, if it's mutter during the Benes Rosh period. Okay, that's the Mishnah in Tvul Yom. So Amar Rav Zosameres, Sofa Yom Kone Eruv. And so now the Gemara wants to try to pinpoint. Because we know that you acquire your Eruv during the Benes Rosh period. What we never said up until now is when during the Benes Rosh period. Benes Rosh is a twilight period that exists between when the day comes to an end and when it's Vaday Laila. How long this period is, so we discussed it already a number of times. We discussed it back in Masechta Shabbos. It's going to come up again in Masechta Pesachim. Actually, the Gemaras there don't align perfectly together. Rishonim have a lengthy debate in terms of how to resolve the two Gemaras. Okay. Anyway, but for our purposes right now, we could just simply look at it as an interval. It's an interval of time. And so now, we know that the Erev is Kona during the Benes Rosh period. Can we pinpoint and say exactly when it is? So Rava says, I think we can. Because over here, we are looking now at our Chumas Maaser, but it's only going to become Chumas Maaser at night. And the Mishnah in Tvul Yom says you cannot use it for your Erev. Oh, so Rava says, so here's what I think now. I think that the Erev is acquired at the beginning of the Benes Rosh period. What he describes as Sof Hayom. Sof Hayom, says Rashi, is Tchilas Benes Rosh. It's the beginning of the Benes Rosh period. Because consider, D'i, as we turn now to the top of the Amud Beis. D'i Sagadach Tchilas Hayom Kona Erev. Because if your Erev is Kona for you at the end of the Benes Rosh period, what the Gemara over here describes as the Tchilas Hayom. Tchilas Hayom here meaning the beginning of Shabbos, the end of the Benes Rosh period. So if you think that, So I don't understand. Why wouldn't the Erev be effective? So that means to say it's transitioning into Tevel Maaser to Trumas Maaser is occurring sometime during the Benes Rosh period. And why not just simply argue now that it should be Kona for you if, in fact, the period, during the interval of Benes Rosh, it's going to create its acquisition only at the end. So Rava says, I think now we can really pinpoint when during the Benes Rosh period the Erev is Kona for you. It's going to be at the beginning. That's why the Mishnah Tvul Yom says that you cannot use this example as a valid Erev. And what the Gemara says, Amar Rav Papa, Afilu Tema Tchilas Yom Kona, Erev, Kona Erev. And Rav Papa says, look, you haven't concluded anything. Meaning, your Erev is concluded during Benesh Mashos. Which part of Benesh Mashos? The beginning or the end? We simply don't know. What about the Mishnah Tefillah Yom that we just learned together? It proves nothing, says Rav Papa. Because, consider, we already said it once today, now we get to say it a second time. In order for an Erev to work, so before Benesh Mashos, it has to be something edible. Period. It has to be Re'uya Miba'od Yom. This Meiser Tevel, which was put into the Kli, into the Tevel Yom Kli, so prior to the nighttime, it's simply inedible. It's Meiser, but untithed Meiser. You didn't take off Shumas Meiser. So it is Eino Re'uya Miba'od Yom. That's why it's no good. As far as when during the Benesh Mashos it's Kona, it is perfectly irrelevant to our discussion. Because in order for an Erev to be good, it has to be Re'uya Miba'od Yom. This does not qualify. Okay. So as much as Rava wanted to try to pinpoint when Benesh Mashos it's Kona, Rav Papa says, from the Mishnah in Tevel Yom, there is no proof. Okay. We are up to the Mishnah now on Lamed Vav Amud Beis and our Sugya of Breira. Okay. So throughout Shas, Breira comes up time and again. It is a popular topic within the Gemara, within Talmud Bavli. Gemara has this discussion a number of places but in the Masechtas of Sukkah, Yuma, Chulin, Gittin, so Breira is a popular topic. So just a quick introduction to Breira. The idea behind Breira is as follows, is that a decision needs to be made. A decision is in fact made. Can we say that the decision that is currently made actually retroactively was made even at an earlier point in time? And so this idea of Breira is going to have a lot of ramifications in Halacha, and as we're going to be discussing over the Sugya extensively, through the Mishnah, through the upcoming Gemaras, that takes us all the way to the top of Lamechesem and Aleph. So the Gemara is going to be having now a good daf and a half discussion regarding the topic of Breira. Now Breira, as far as the Erev is concerned, so it is obvious where Breira will come in. Because we know when exactly is the point of the Erev taking effect during the Benesh Mashos period. I know we just tried to figure out when during Benesh Mashos, but we could say definitively during Benesh Mashos. Now, let's say you want to make an Erev, but you don't know yet whether or not you need the Erev. The Erev offsets you. It moves your Makom Shvisa to a new location. But you don't know yet if you need the Erev. So you set up the Erev without the knowledge yet as to whether or not you need it. And then on Shabbos, the knowledge comes in. So now with the knowledge coming in on Shabbos, with the information coming in on Shabbos, can I now look back to the Benesh Mashos period and say, look, I now know that either I did or did not need the Erev, whichever way we go. So let's keep it simple. Let's say I need the Erev. But this information only comes on Shabbos. Can I now go back to the Benesh Mashos period and say, look, retroactive now to the Benesh Mashos period, so since I need the Erev now on Shabbos, so retroactively can I not say that the decision already was rooted back in the Benesh Mashos period? This is the discussion of Breira, and so let's have it over here in Erevin. But as we're going to see, it covers many different topics. Erev just being one example. Masna Adam, the Mishnah over here, makes no bones about it. A person can make it tonight. He can make a condition. And that is Masna Adam El Eruvo V'Omer, and he says the following. Im Bo Nachrim Min HaMizrach Eruve L'Marav. Let's say non-Jews are coming from the east, and I need to make a getaway. So now, I'll make the obvious point. If it's a Sakanas Nefashos, so then you'll go as far as you need to go. Okay, but somehow, however, by setting up an Eruv and moving an extra 2,000 Amas in another direction, so that'll give him a safe distance. So I want my Eruv to the west to take an effect. But let's say they're coming in from the east, so then my Eruv in the west should take effect. So here, in the Mishnah scenario, he actually set up two Eruvs. He knew trouble was coming. He didn't know which direction the trouble was coming from. So he set up two Eruvs, which gives him an additional 2,000 Amas in either direction. Now, obviously, only one of the Eruvs can work. You can only have one point of center. So now, the Mishnah says, well, that's fine. A person could set up his multiple Eruvim before Shabbos, and now, when Shabbos comes, whichever one he needs, that's the one he's going to use. Imbal lekan ulekan, lamakam she'erza eilech. So let's say, whichever direction they come, so I'll use the other one, that's fine. So, elo ba'ulo lekan velo lekan, harini kivnei iri. Now, if they come in neither direction, turns out that just rumors, never actually occurred. So under those circumstances, he can maintain neither Erev, meaning his original Makom Shvisa. All that would be fine, says the Mishnah. Im b'chacham in ha-mizrach. Now here, same scenario, but over here, this next example is an example in which he wants to go in a particular direction. He's not running away, he's running towards. Echacham is coming. Min ha-mizrach eruv el-mizrach. Min ha-marav eruv el-marav. So now he hears of a Talmid Chacham coming, and he's going to say shir. He just simply doesn't know which direction. So balakan ulakan. Let's say I have Chachamim coming in both directions. So lamakum shir se'elech. So now I get to pick which shir I want to go to, and you could use whichever eruv you want. Lolakan v'lolakan. Turns out that the scholar in residence never made it, and so now he has nowhere to go. That's fine. Harinikiv ne'iri. So then he could just simply not use either Erev and maintain his original Makom Shvisa. Rav Yehuda Omer, Im haya echem mehem rabo, holech etzel rabo. V'im hayu shneim rabosev l'makom shir tzeyelech. Rav Yehuda's only contribution over here, I mean to this discussion, is that sometimes the decision is going to be made for you. In that, if let's say one of them is your Rebbeim, so then, by definition, you're going to go to the one that is in the direction of your Rebbe. If, however, neither is your Rebbe, and they're both just Talmidei Chachamim, so then you get to choose. Okay, and we'll discuss later what exactly Rav Yehuda is, what point is he arguing with as far as the Tanakam is concerned. Let's start with the Gemara. Ki asa Rabbi Yitzchak tani ipcha. So Rabbi Yitzchak taught the Mishnah, he just had a flipped case of the Mishnah. So, I'm sorry, ipcha kula masnisen. So he had the flip case of the Mishnah. Now, in his version of the Mishnah, it's the same construct. It's the same idea of Breira. It's the same conclusions of the Mishnah. It just happens to be that he's running towards the Nachriyim, and he's running away from the Talmid Chacham. Now, that both of those scenarios are a little bit strange in the Gemara notes. So, Kashya Nachriyim Anachriyim, Kashya Chacham Achacham. So, what is he doing running towards the Nachriyim? And what is he doing running away from the Talmid Chacham, aside from the fact that obviously it's not our Mishnah? So Nachrim and Nachrim lo kasha, ha bifar hagavna, ha bemar demasna. So the Gemara says, look, in the case of our Mishnah, you're running away because that's the par hagavna. Aside from my difficulty in pronunciation, so Rashi points out over here that it's gabe amasu barech mimneim. Okay, tax collector, you're running away from the tax collector. Okay, I'll remind all of us, the Gemara Baba Kama says very clearly that dina demachus adina, that you have to abide by the laws of the land, and as a result of that, you pay your taxes. It's a mitzvah to pay taxes, so it's a requirement, it's an obligation to pay taxes. Good. So the over here, so he's running away. So it could just very well be that human nature. Okay, I know that's not a lumdish answer. That's extraordinarily balabatish. But it could very well be over here that it's an unauthorized tax collector. Okay. Anyway, so that's the that would be the our Mishnah. On the other hand, in Rav Yitzchak's inverted version, where he's running towards the Nachri, so that's talking about the Mari Damase. Rashi explains the Mari Damase as it's a political leader, all right, a governor, if you will, and basically you need to talk to him. Rashi says you have to assuage him. Rashi says you have to yell at him. Whatever the case is, you need an audience with him. And that's why you're running towards. Okay. So that is the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And parenthetically, by the way, it goes back to the point I made in the Mishnah, in that you're running away from the Nachri, you're not running for your life. If you're running for your life, so then you have the right and the obligation to go well beyond Chum. In the case of the Mishnah is talking about where you're trying to escape some sort of financial obligation. Okay, so anyway, so fine. That's the that's how to resolve the differences between our version of the Mishnah and Rabbi Yitzchak's version of the Mishnah. What about the Talmid Chacham? You're running away from the Talmid Chacham? That's bizarre. But the Gemara explains Chacham Achacham Lokasha. We can also explain the discrepancy. Ha be Mosef Pirkei, ha be Mikre Shema. Mosef Pirkei, someone giving shir. He's darshaning, and he's a wonderful Baal Darshan. He unbelievable. And so people love to hear him. So that's our Mishnah. And meanwhile, in the in Rav Yitzchak's version, Mikrei Shema, Rashi, Klomar, Malam de Tinokos Lisbalo. So Rashi's description over here is that basically he's teaching things which are rudimentary. And again, a moment of honesty. It's hard. It's hard to learn things that are rudimentary. It's much more enjoyable. It's much more entertaining to already have the information and then just work with the analysis. That's obviously much more pleasing. But to learn the basics and to learn the rudimentary, so that's very difficult. And right, basically, you're running away from it. You know, right now, you don't want that. Okay, so that's the and that's what you're running away from. It rather amazing, however, that the person is old enough and competent enough to set up Eruvs, and meanwhile, right, is trying to run away from the Makri, from the one who's trying to teach you how to daven. Okay, anyway, it's a strange umdana. But meanwhile, this is an excellent stopping point, because really from here starts the Breira Sugya. Right, we just scratched the surface. We didn't do any kind of analysis on Breira. That's all coming up tomorrow. Okay, so let's recap. What we accomplished this morning. We further analyzed the sheet of Rav Meir. Rav Meir, who says that by a suffek, Eruv is going to be Machmir. By suffek, Tfilah de Rabban is going to be Mekel. But the Gemara says Rav Meir holds that Eruvin is Daraisa. Tchumim is Daraisa. That sheet is Rav Meir. What about another case where Rav Meir is Mekel, notably the case where he went to bed with somebody else that night, after having left the room, discovered that the person did not wake up, and he knows that he touched that person. He doesn't know when, meaning was it before he died or after he died? And so Rav Meir says, under those circumstances, it's going to be Mekel. Why? That's a suffik da'oraisa. So, okay, good. We discussed that. We discussed it. And the Gemara gave two proposals in terms of how to understand that case. One proposal of Rabba and Rav Yosef, and another proposal by Rava in terms of why that case is different. Our next topic today, as we are now on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, is the stira between the shitas of Rav Yossi. Rav Yossi by suffek Erev is Mekel. And meanwhile, by the suffek Tuma de Rabbanan, Rav Yossi is Machmir. So how do we process that? So the Gemara gave us three different ways to process that information. Rav Huna Bar Chinna says that the Tuma has an Iker min HaTorah, and Tchum, really interesting line of the Gemara, Tchum is Eino Iker min HaTorah, just simply not based at all on Melechah Shabbos. So I highlighted the Rashi this morning. A second approach is that Rav Yossi by Eru is not espousing his own opinion, but rather that of his Rebbeim. And the third approach, that of Rava, is that as far as Rav Yossi is concerned, in the case of Tuma, Hamed Tamei Aches Kaso, the person who was Tamei Durabanan, but he was definitively Tamei, and so therefore all we're doing is just continuing the status quo in that we know he was Tamei, and he toveled in a questionable mikvah, and the Gemara clarified the mikvah was never actually measured, so we don't know if the mikvah ever bevadai was Tahor, and so therefore we're just simply continuing the status quo of him being Tamei. Okay. The next topics of discussion of the Gemara is a couple of questions. One question was Shtei Kikaros, one was Shtei Kikaros of Shurma, one was Tamei, the other is Tahor. I used both of them, and I just simply said, whichever one is the Tahor one, that's going to be for me my Eruv. The Gemara dismisses that out of hand. Rav Huna dismisses that out of the hand because it is Eino a Seuda Haru'uya Mibo'ol Yom, therefore it's no good. Next case of the Gemara is where he changes the loaf of bread from being chulin to being hekdesh, and that change is going to occur on Shabbos. Can he use it? And what about the flip? Okay, and that question was dealt with Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says that in the former case, it works. In the latter case, it does not work. And Rav Nachman explained why. We dealt with that Mishnah in Tful Yom, where the person poured the Levi poured his Meiser Rishon, his Tevel Meiser Rishon, into a Tful Yom Keli, but delayed its status of turning into Trumas Meiser until evening. Because if he wouldn't do that, it would become Tamei, it would become Pasal. The Truma would be Pasal. So he delayed until evening. So the Mishnah in Tful Yom says that works. Can you make an Eruv with that? So the Mishnah in Tful Yom says you cannot. And then the analysis of Rav and Rav Papa, do we see from there when during the Bein HaShemash is your Kona? Rav thinks that you do have a proof, and Rav Papa says no such proof, because it's not a Seuda Ruya Mibo'ol Yom. And then we started this morning the topic of Breira. The person sets up multiple Eruvin because he wants possible extensions in either direction. Nachrim are coming from a side, he doesn't know which side. So he sets up Eruvim in order to escape, in order to move away. Or the Rebbe's coming, and he needs the extension in order to get there. And so he sets up Eruvim. During the Ben Hashemashos period, he doesn't know which one he needs. Shabbos, he discovers which one he needs. Can he go now retroactively back to the Ben Hashemashos period and now use the one that he needed? And basically, the decision that he now only discovers now, can that go back retroactive to the time that he set up the Eruv? It is the question of Breira. The Mishnah clearly says yes. Mishnah is unequivocal that under those circumstances he can. The only discussion that we had so far is that Rav Yitzchak had a version of the Mishnah just the opposite, running to the Nachrim, running away from the Chacham. Well, what's the difference between Rav Yitzchak's version and our version? The Gemara explained. Adkan.